The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. We've got a great one lined up for you today. Lots of laughs.
We do. And if you happen to be one of those people who doesn't happen to listen to the show on, you know, the first day or two when we put the podcast up, this isn't going to affect you and you've let us down. But for people who are listening,
live with that. Live with that.
Day of, there's a real cool opportunity. If you want to win a car, $100 lottery ticket, raffle ticket, I guess is the right word, for the Mercury One ball. All this money goes to help support Mercury One, and you might win a Mercedes Benz. It's a beautiful 2018 Mercedes Benz. You can get that. In addition, if you enter right now, we are going to be drawing tomorrow for two tickets to come to the Mercury One Ball. That's Saturday. We're all going to be there. It's a really cool event. It's here at the studios. You get to see the studios. The tickets are valued at $750.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's really a fun event, and you'll be hanging out with us, and you can get your raffle ticket at mercuryone.org/M1. By the way, this is being recorded on Wednesday. I have no idea what the date is. Practically no idea what the year is. Mm-hmm.
2004, by the way.
Okay, do that.
I think it's 2004.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You may have that Y2K virus.
Okay.
Anyway, this will be over. We're going to draw on Thursday around 9 a.m. Eastern or Central Time.
Okay.
Okay.
So today on the podcast, we had a lot of bizarre things happening in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see that Amazon went way out on a limb and came up with, you know, where they're going to put the heart of their company. Mm-hmm. And they finally picked where they're going to put their second headquarters. But they found out that they also need a second headquarters. And we reveal that news to you in a little bit, beyond that, why. Mm. Also, animal news.
Yes, there's some very dangerous monkeys in Florida. If you're in Florida, look out for them.
This is very dangerous. Andrew Heaton, who's got his new podcast, Something's Off with Andrew Heaton. He's going to bring that news. We also have polar bears that are out of control now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought global warming was killing them. Apparently not, according to the people who live around them.
Yeah. Also, a new meat tax, a robot brothel in Finland, and we go to the ground with Joy Villow. You remember her? She was the one who went to the Grammys a few years ago wearing the Make America Great Again dress. They didn't like that so much, but she's out in California, and she's been working with Mercury One. She's going to give us the update on the California fires, all on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program. It's Wednesday, November 14th.
Brick House Nutrition. Brick House Nutrition is, of course, you've been a friend of the program for a while now. Mm-hmm. I've been talking about them since back in the Pat and Stu days. And it was it's a great company. And one of the things that they do really well is make sure you can they understand how we are, which is we don't want to be healthy.
I don't.
I don't want to take the steps to be healthy. I
mean, here's the thing.
Super easy.
This turns me off. Field Greens, full serving of real certified vegan, vegetarian, and USDA organic fruits and vegetables. Complete with antioxidants.
Well, it's like add steak to the.
No, I know, I know. But all those words. Here's what sells me. I don't have to eat my greens. I get them in this, and so I don't have to have a salad. No, eat your broccoli. No. All I have to do is have this. Go to BrickHouseGlenn.com. Use the promo code Glenn. Get $15 off your first order. It's Field of Greens. BrickHouseGlenn.com.
Glenn Beck.
First it's France, then it is the Germans. The Europeans are finally starting to get it. Last week, the French president mentioned the idea of creating a European army. Yay! Because Europe with arms has never caused any problems. Yesterday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel backed him up saying, quote, "We have to work on the vision of one day creating a real European army." Really? One day? You know, it's been 70 years since the end of World War II, and I'm glad that you're finally getting around to it. But Trump called her remarks insulting and told them instead to agree to meet their NATO commitments. Wait, hold it just a sec. Wait a minute. Weren't you the one? Wait, I thought you didn't like NATO. Hold it just a second. You just got me there. You had me at bring the troops home. We are subsidizing half the planet's defense budgets. In fact, we're paying for almost all of it. World War II ended 73 years ago. The Cold War ended two decades ago. Why do we have to hold up Western Europe's deal anymore? I mean, I like having, a bargain with these people, but we're not getting a bargain. We're getting screwed. They have the intellectual, honest conversation about NATO? No, uh-uh. NATO did an outstanding job. It really did. Without it, people in France would be speaking probably German or Russian. NATO was established to combat one enemy. All of its members had one goal, to protect themselves against the Soviet Union. Well, guess what doesn't exist anymore? Now, Russia does, and Russia has its eyes set on Europe. But unless we're actually going to talk about that, and unless Germany isn't saying, well, we've got to protect ourselves against, evil Russia, and by the way, we want to buy all their gas so we can be on their heroin, I'm not interested. So why are we continuing to do this? Why are the NATO members still subsidizing, being subsidized by us? We don't have identifying interests and unifying interests anymore, do we? Do we? Because I don't know who's for Russia and who's against Russia. I don't know who's for national socialism and who's against national socialism. I don't know how many, for instance, the UK. Are you convinced that the UK can stand against the Islamic Sharia law courts that are already in its country? Because I'm not. As far as policy goes, there hasn't been much to criticize President Trump on with the tariffs, except for the tariffs, I would say. I understand what he's doing here. First, he rocked the world by criticizing NATO during the first year of his administration. Now it looks like he's perpetuating the continued use of the U.S. military as European security blanket that I don't want to provide anymore. Our global helicopter parenting really has to stop. Is there a reason why Japan still hasn't rebuilt their military and relies on us for security? Yeah, they're broke. But so are we. Enough is enough. China is a very big problem, but why not let Japan take their natural place and take the brunt of containing China? Let them foot the bill. How much of the deficit and national debt could we cut by empowering Europe and Japan to take responsibility for themselves? I think it's time to re-examine and think outside of the box, because our debt situation is unsustainable. And quite honestly, I want our troops to come home. I want our troops to concentrate on the problems that we have here. And I don't mean as troops. I mean as good, solid citizens. Europe and Japan, it's time to leave mommy and daddy's basement. I know, it's scary. But even in America, at 26, you're considered adults. You're what, 73? Don't worry. You'll screw it up and we'll be here. We might give you some limited funds on a credit card to help wean you off, but far as I'm concerned, it's time for mommy and daddy to kick them out of the house. The free ride is over.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
You know, it doesn't take anything huge to help. You know, people feel right now, people feel like I can't do anything. And yet you can, unlike ever before. And sometimes the ability to help comes from the strangest places. If you just don't close your eyes, if you decide to pursue, sometimes where you thought you were going turns out to be a completely different destination. A mysterious typo-written email or message appears in your inbox, purportedly from a Nigerian prince or a down-on-his-luck businessman. Now, most people respond one of two ways. You either ignore it, cynical yet amused, or you just fall for it and you lose thousands of dollars to an obvious scam. But something else happened in early 2017. Ben Taylor, he got that message on Facebook. He got it from a man in Monrovia, Liberia. His name was Joel Willie. In the post, it read,
My name is Joel. I'm from Liberia, West Africa. I need some assistance from you. Business or financial assistance that will help empower me, D-A-T. Well, Ben knew full well that most likely he was being scammed. He was skeptical. But he responded anyway, and he said, how can I help? Joel asked him to mail Primo Electronics, cameras, computers, printers, to a shabby building in New Jersey so that he could sell those on the Liberian market and split the profits with Ben.
Well, I figured that this was just one of those African internet scams, but I decided to play along and see where it led me. I figured the more time of his that I could waste, the less time that he'd have to spend ripping other people off. So I told him that I didn't have any electronics to send, but I did have a business proposition if he was interested. I told him that I was in the photography business, and that if he'd be willing to take pictures of where he lived and send them to me, I'd pay him for the ones that I liked. He agreed, and the next morning he sent a few over. They were just terrible.
So the resulting photos that Joel sent were two out-of-focus, blurred canopy of trees half-lit by sunlight, clearly shot with a 15-year-old flip phone. So Ben responded, still warmly, and much to Joel's surprise, mailed him a rose-red Vivitar camera, instructing him to send more photos. Joel, overjoyed, replied, I've decided to really commit and devote myself to D-I-S, dis business, and whatever picture you want me to take. Still skeptical, Ben told Joel that his photography needed some work.
Well, the pictures were a little better quality, but they still sucked. So I said to him that if he wanted to make money taking pictures, he needed to practice. He needed to hold the camera still and make sure his subject had plenty of light.
So Ben was genuinely surprised when he received a batch full of really good, stunning photos.
Eventually, Joel did get better.
Yeah, these are actually pretty good.
Which posed a big problem.
When he put in the work, I thought, oh no, now I've got to figure out a way to compensate Joel for these pictures, or I'm going to be the scammer.
That was Ben in an interview on CBS News. But Ben decided to design a small book with the photos and titled it By the Grace of God. Now, Ben thought that, you know, they'd sell a few copies and move on. But the sales kind of exceeded everybody's expectations. And soon, Ben had $1,000 in profits.
I made a promise to Joel that we'd split the profits 50-50 and that my half would go to charity. So I wrote to Joel and said that I wanted to give my portion to the people of Liberia and asked if there was anything in his community that I could help with. He said that there were a lot of children that were in need because their parents were so poor. So I asked, how can we help the children? And he said, school materials, stationery, book bags, chairs. These are the things that children suffer for the most. He said that we should start by targeting the youngest 100 kids and that it would cost me about $500. I thought, this is where we're really going to find out what Joel's made out of. Either he's going to use that money for the kids, or he's going to keep it for himself. But I still owed him money, so I decided to move forward and see what happens.
Joel agreed. Ben just shrugged. He walked the cash to Western Union and sent it off into what he assumed would, you know, be the abyss, never to be seen or heard from again. But after a few weeks, he received another package of photos. These photos were colorful, filled with life, poignant, enlivening. In them were school children praying. They were saying a thankful prayer for their new book bags and notebooks and their sharp new outfits, all smiling.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
Relief Factor.
Relief Factor is something that I've been taking for about a year now. And I took it in desperation because I've tried everything else to curb my pain. And I was in crippling pain for a long time. Couldn't live that way anymore. Couldn't take doctor's medicine anymore. I can't live this way. My wife said, try Relief Factor. And the commercial says, try it for 3 weeks. And if it works, great. Order more. Well, in 3 weeks, I noticed a huge difference, so I ordered more. I've been taking it for a year now. You have nothing to lose but a 3-week trial. Try it for 3 weeks. It's, you know, put together by doctors. It's 100% natural and drug-free, and it reduces the inflammation which causes our pain. Try it. Get your life back with ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384. We thank them for their sponsorship. Pat, what's on your plate today?
Oh, so much.
Mm-hmm.
For one thing, did you know there's a CEO of the Democratic National Committee? There's a CEO, not just the head, who is Perez. There's a CEO of the Democratic National Committee. Her name is Seema Nanda. I didn't know Seema, and I didn't know about Hernanda. I didn't know she was a CEO of the Democratic
Party. Right. There's a lot here you didn't know so far.
A lot
here
I didn't
know. But I have a feeling there's more to the story.
Well, she was asked by Yahoo News about who's welcome in the Democrat Party.
Uh-huh.
And here's what she said.
Is there room for socialists in the Democratic Party?
Oh, sure.
You know, I think we can, you know, we can get involved in, you know, what we all call ourselves. I think there's room for all sorts of Democrats in the Democratic Party.
What does that mean? I think we can get involved in what we call ourselves. What does that mean?
I don't know, especially from the party that is doing is only slicing and dicing everybody into groups.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. You know, I think we can talk about you know what we
names
call
we call
each other.
It's a great point. They're going to say no labels now. This is all they talk about all the time.
These are the people that brought us LGBT,
talk about IQ, identity politicians. That's what they're all about. Plus, the better question for the Democrat Party is, are there Democrats allowed in the socialist? Is there room for Democrats anymore in the Democrat in the Socialist Party?
Because
the socialists have taken over that party. I mean, is there any doubt in anybody's mind that it's become a party of socialists now?
Yes, in a lot of people in the press, their mind. I saw an article today that Sinema is a she won because she's such a centrist.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is
oh, good golly. Really?
I mean, she definitely tried to play herself as a centrist.
She is not a centrist.
She's not a centrist.
She's no more centrist than Beto was.
Hang on just a second. Just because she was a member of Code Pink doesn't make her extremist.
I know. And that's another thing. They are so extreme in that party. I think we could learn some interesting lessons from the Democrats and how they've won so many battles. I mean, they've just Overton windowed us on absolutely everything. We need to start doing that on the right. We need to start insisting
on... we won't.
I know we won't.
Yeah, you know why?
We need to.
I really am convinced because people like Paul Ryan don't believe in the stuff that we believe. They don't believe in
Real conservatism.
Yeah, they don't believe in strict adherence to the Constitution. They don't believe that. And, you know, that's a cute little thing, but we got to do what we got to do. So they won't Overton window. I would love to Overton window and say, you know what? Let's reset this to 1791's kind of style
of
government.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
They would go crazy. Yeah, and then if you were like, okay, well, we just want to get rid of the Department of Education, they would be, oh, okay, all right, finally some sane people around.
Yeah. Start with, how about zero abortions for any reason ever? Let's start there. And when babies come out of the birth canal, they're given an AR-15 at birth. Okay?
Right.
Let's start there.
Start there.
Okay? Yeah. On abortions and gun control, that's where we begin.
Yeah, I think, and what we do is we start with the AK-47 is fully loaded, and then we compromise to they have to load it themselves when they learn.
Right.
Then it's a bipartisan solution, I think,
exactly.
At that point.
Right. Exactly. And then we start arguing with them when they have a problem with some of our solutions.
You know, I think this really is what they've done.
Tell
me. They have unveiled plans for guaranteed jobs, guaranteed housing.
Yeah.
That is directly from
it
the
is
Soviet.
The
yeah, it's from the Soviet Constitution.
Well, yes. I mean, remember when they started saying $15 minimum wage and how ridiculous it sounded?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was watching something Stossel did for Reason yesterday, and it's all about how Amazon came out and they were getting criticized and everyone wanted a $15 minimum wage, and they fought back for a little while, and then they said, "Oh, all right, $15 minimum wage." Then they started harassing other companies to match. Then they said they're going to lobby Congress to raise the minimum wage to $15. And of course, Stossel, completely right on this point, is This is just good for Amazon. If every other company has to raise theirs to $15, they're already paying $15 an hour. Everyone else gets forced to raise it. It's just going to give an advantage to Amazon. And
that's
now,
exactly what they did with the progressives in World War II. Mm-hmm. They put out great car companies, great tire companies, great manufacturers, because GM, Chrysler, and Ford all got together and said, "This is what we think that the country should mandate for manufacturing." And so it was good for the big three because they could afford it, and they put everyone else out of business. That's what's happening again.
Alex Epstein has made this case before. He wrote the Moral Case for Fossil Fuels. We've had him on the show before. His point is, like, we constantly, as you know, people who are conservatives and small government, are arguing just for a less worse version of what the left is asking for.
Yes.
It's like, you look at right now, Obamacare is a great example of this. We were like, free market solutions, free market solutions, free market solutions. They're like, oh, we want government, 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 government. So they come in and they pass Obamacare, and it's all, you know, going through. And now, literally every single member of the Republican Party, with, I don't know, a couple of exceptions, have now taken large swaths of Obamacare and embraced it. Three states voted to get the Medicare expansion that initially conservative states opposed. The pre-existing conditions thing is part of the platform, basically, for the Republican Party now.
It's because the Republican Party continues to hire people and elect people like Mitt Romney, who is for all of these programs.
Well, see, but Donald Trump's for that, too.
Oh, I know that.
You know, I mean, this is...
Well, they're like-minded, more like-minded than people would believe.
Certainly different approaches.
Different approaches, absolutely.
Yeah, he's a
similar in policies. Yeah, they're both really moderate Republicans.
Correct. He's a nice guy that believes in big government, and Donald Trump believes, you know, a hammer to get things done.
Right.
But he believes in big government. Yeah. And, you know, can we talk a little bit about the tariffs? Because there was a new study that came out that showed where Trump lost is the parts of the country where the tariffs hit people the hardest.
Yeah, it's an interesting analysis, and it's not a huge surprise. You know, the economy is such an important issue, and Trump rightly gets some credit for it, and we've been on a great run here for a while. But the issues of when we set these tariffs on China responded, and they targeted. Remember this? They were like, oh, they targeted these regions, and they have political importance to the president, and they targeted all of those. And they have now, so a lot of these farmers in, like, Iowa, for example, where the Republicans lost a couple seats in somewhat surprising circumstances, were regions where they were exporting tons of material to China and now are no longer doing it. There was one analysis that had, you know, soybean exports, which has got to be the most boring lead into a story in history, but they were down 97% to China. 97%.
Yeah,
it's wiping out your whole business.
From $1.1 billion a month, okay, from about $1 billion a month to 24 million.
Wow.
Exports in soybeans to China.
This destroys your business if this is your business.
$1 billion to 24 million. Yeah, you can't do business that way.
Well, yeah, we can. We can do it like FDR, and we can then subsidize the farming.
Well, you're going to have to.
Yeah, you're going to have to. You're going to have to. And this is why tariffs are so bad. Just so bad. And
it's really kicking in now, too.
Anybody
what we feared.
Yeah, anybody who supports the president needs to, in the nicest of ways, urge the president, has won. You've won, Mr. President. You've won. Now let's get rid of these tariffs.
And again, tariffs.
Before they ruin the economy, because if you lose the economy, you're going to lose in 2020.
He's done.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
So my staff of millennials are talking about adulting. I don't even know what adulting is. And a quarter-life crisis. What the heck is a quarter-life crisis? Well, we're about to find out. J.P. Pokluta is an author of a book called Welcome to Adulting. And it is taking millennials by storm. Welcome, J.P. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing so great. Thanks for having me on, Glenn. Appreciate you.
You bet. Okay, so JP, adulting. What exactly is adulting?
Well, it is the practice of behaving in a way characteristic of a responsible adult, especially the accomplishment of a mundane but necessary task. If that sounds like I read that from the dictionary, it's because I did. It's a new word. We just put that in the dictionary last year, and so it is official.
So this is something that we used to just do naturally. When you were 18, you were, at least in my household, you were kind of expected to go out and earn your own way, and, you know, you're an adult now. Get out. Why the breakdown of this thing that has always been natural?
Well, I don't know that it's always been natural. I mean, I think hindsight is always 20/20 when we look back on, you know, our own development and how we've grown up. And I know what they're saying about millennials and young adults today, the delayed adolescence, they're lazy, narcissistic.
I don't think that's entirely true at all.
Yeah, entitled and all of those things.
Yeah.
And I appreciate, you know, it sounds like we may have a shared perspective on that, because it seems like we all need help growing up and exist in different times and whatnot. And when I look at the future, I'm hopeful. I think these guys, they need leaders. They need people to inspire them. But I think they want to do something great. They want to change the world. They want to do something bigger than themselves. And I hope this is a resource that helps them do that.
Okay, so this is part of the problem, I think, with suicides that are rising in millennials. And it is that people just aren't convinced that they can make a difference, that their life has no meaning, that there is no purpose to anything. And is this what the quarter life crisis is about?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Glenn. I think people are looking for purpose. I think they're looking in the wrong places. I think they have 1,000 friends on social media, you know, 1,000 Twitter followers, you know, whatever, but no real relationships, no depth, no meaningful conversations. They're not looking for hope in the right places. And so they despair. You know, they want to be, their number one and number two goals of millennials are to be rich and to be famous. And when they hit the wall of pursuing riches and pursuing stardom, they're left despairing and they're looking for more.
I will tell you that wealth and fame are gigantic imposters. And what really led me to my awakening in my 30s was I had accomplished a little bit of both and realized that's completely empty. And then had no idea where to go and where to find it.
Brad Pitt says the same thing. Tom Brady says the same thing. Jim Carrey says the same thing. Russell Brand just came out with a statement saying the same thing. They say, my friend Todd says, the rich are infinitely better off than the poor, because while the poor think riches will bring happiness, the wealthy know better. And I think that's a true statement. The same is with fame. These millennials, young adults and whatnot, they want to do something bigger than themselves. They just don't know how. And so there's this cry of their heart. The scripture says that God has set eternity in our hearts. I think they're trying to fill that eternal void with all the things of this world, and they're just coming up empty. And so I think the generation, your listeners, the generation that has gone before them, needs to be patient and take time, sit down with them, continue to tell the war stories of old. Tell us about the times, you know, of you growing up, the hardships that you faced. Try to do so without judgment. Mm-hmm. And ask lots of questions. Seek to understand. Become a student of your children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And know that there is a desire in them. It may be hidden behind some arrogance and pride, but there is a desire in them to learn from you.
I will tell you that I don't think there was this spread of misunderstanding between generations when I was a kid. Maybe between my grandparents and me, because they grew up in the Great Depression, but not my parents and me. I mean, there was the misunderstanding, but things in the world have changed so much that when you talk to millennials now, and I'm, you know, 54, you talk to millennials and it is a different world. They see the world differently. They speak a different language. They understand technology and the world as it's going to be much better. And, I think they have a reason to be a little concerned if they don't have somebody in their life that's, you know, an older generation going, it's okay. It's okay. It's really exciting. What you guys are facing is really exciting, and you're going to be able to change the world if you keep your head on your shoulders.
Yeah, I think you're right. You have to have someone to talk to. I also think you're pointing to the right challenges with the information age, the boom of technology, you know, carrying a mega computer in our pockets everywhere we go. That does change a person. And so it's interesting what you say about the gap between you and your parents being smaller. I think that that's probably I would share your perspective. And at the same time, I think that we all go through something I like to call kind of the younger brother, older brother syndrome, which comes, I picked that up from the biblical story, the prodigal son, where I think we're all kind of the younger brother at some point, and someone is patient with us and, you know, embraces us and extends grace to us. And then, we're with the father and all is right. And we grow up and we overnight become the older brother. And then we just look back with judgment and we don't want to be patient with anyone else. And so I try to, you know, when I sit with someone, you know, who's young and naive and just like I was, and I'm sure am in ways I can't see right now, just to be patient with them, seek to understand their world, where they're coming from, what is their worldview, and you know, point them to truth.
So you're working now at Waterfront or Watermark Church, which is a great organization here in Dallas, Texas. Which
yes, sir.
I don't even know how. What's the youth population there?
I don't know the youth. So I spend all my time with young adults. So, you know, 20 to 35 is the porch. I say all my time. I teach on the weekends as well.
Right.
Services. I share that with Todd, our senior pastor. But we have at the porch on a Tuesday night, we have about 4,000 young adults here in Dallas.
That's amazing.
And then we have another 10 campuses around the country, and then another, you know, 50,000 or so streaming online. And so it's become, by God's grace, the largest young adult gathering in the country.
So what is the number one thing that they are concerned about, and how can people who are listening help them?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. I think, well, dating, right? At that point in your life, you've graduated college and you're trying to figure out how you can convince someone of the opposite sex to spend the rest of their life with you. Anxiety is a huge felt need right now, as you talk about just growing suicide rates and depression rates. I think you have a generation despairing, out of control. And so that's a huge felt need. But the biggest one you've also touched on keenly is just searching for purpose. I think they're trying to figure out, hey, is there a God, first of all? And if there is, what is his desire for me? And how do I find my purpose in this world? And so that is, I don't know that that's the felt need. I think the felt need can be more of the dating and anxiety. But the real need, the underlying need is, hey, what were you created for? That's where I think this book, you know, the chapter two is all about purpose and finding your identity.
I will tell you, the name of the book is Welcome to Adulting, by the way. And I'll tell you, JP, that I searched for answers for a long time. And in my 30s, I had a complete crash and I lost absolutely everything. And it was only then that I was willing to look at the real answer, which is God. And, you know, he had been just this distant kind of thing that I believed in, but it wasn't really a real relationship, et cetera, et cetera. And it's not something that is being encouraged at all in a large portion of our society now. And churches seem so out of touch to so many millennials. I mean, it's different here in the South, but seem completely distant. And God is kind of this distant idea. And we were just listening to some audio from the wildfires in California. I don't think I've heard so many Californians talk about God ever. You know, when you are really stripped down, that's when you start to find answers. That's when you know, in the midst of human suffering, that's where you find him.
And they say there's no atheist in the foxhole. And we've seen that. We almost saw a great awakening happen with when 9/11 occurred. Whenever tragic hits, we turn to the Creator. I've seen the same thing in Haiti when the earthquake hit in 2010. You had the whole country coming around saying, okay, now, you know, turning from Satanism to, okay, we think there's a Creator, a God. Mm-hmm. And that's similar to my story, Glenn. I mean, 16 years ago, I was at a bar on a Saturday night and was kind of everything wrong with Dallas in a person, was pretentious. I wanted to be a millionaire before I was 30. I had the Jaguar and the penthouse condo and, mm-hmm. and was, you know, a girlfriend and another, you know, several girls and all of that just in one person. And I was at a bar and someone invited me to church, and I came to Watermark and I sat in the back row and I was hungover. I smelled like smoke from the night before, you know, at the club. And I was addicted to sex, addicted to porn. And I just began to wrestle with, who is God, and really seeking that out. And I looked at all of the world religions because I thought, what are the odds I'd be born to the right country? You know, if I was born in China, I'd be Buddhist, or India, I'd be Hindu, and Iran, I might be Muslim. And so I just started studying, started from scratch. And I grew up in the church, but I was just like really had a bias against Christianity. And as I continued to explore that, I was overwhelmed by the evidence that pointed me to Jesus Christ. And when I surrendered my life to him, just as that person that I described earlier, everything changed. What I did for fun changed, who I hung out with changed, the way I thought changed, the way I talked changed, and ultimately, you know, my profession changed. And so I'm so passionate about helping the next generation reach this generation. You can call it Gen Y or Gen Z, millennials, young adults. I want to see that gap you addressed earlier become narrower and smaller so that, you know, we can raise up, because all of us, we have to, we know we're going to leave this place, and you want to leave a legacy. You want to leave people behind you that are seeking to, you know, live out their purpose in this world.
JP, I'm thrilled to have you on. It sounds like we have a lot of shared experiences and shared belief in the younger generation. I think they get a very bad rap. I've met good and bad, but I've met good and bad in all generations. This generation is looking. They just don't have anyone encouraging and anyone who is telling them truth. You know, they've been lied to, I think, their whole life. And I have great confidence in them. So thank you so much for what you're doing. And the name of the book is Welcome to Adulting. Welcome to Adulting. Jonathan J.P. Pokluta. Thanks for being on. We'll talk again. Thanks, JP.
Glenn, thank you so much. Appreciate you.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Now we bring in Andrew Heaton to join us. He's from what is it? Something's off.
Something's off with Andrew Heaton.
Yeah, I've never heard of a name of a show that is more accurate than that one.
Thank you. It's top of the charts with the Heaton family right now.
Yeah,
it's doing really well.
It's doing really well.
It's a hit in Alva, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, Something's Off with Andrew Heaton, and it's a look at the news and kind of an enjoyable look at the news.
Thank you.
Yeah, because you don't really get into all of the tit for tat kind of stuff.
I think that the news has so much bile in it right now, and so much, it's as if everybody sits down at the beginning of the day and goes, let's talk about which team is the good team, which team is the bad team. And I don't think that's helpful. And I'd rather just kind of be a release valve for everybody.
Yeah.
We'll talk about substantive stuff. We had a good chat yesterday about, like, you know, kind of the way the parties break down and everything. But I kick it off with you know, something that's a little bit more enjoyable.
Well, I didn't think that it was the best thing to start the show with animal news.
No. Animal news is great.
But I was surprised because, you know, what you told me yesterday in your podcast actually helps me make sense of what's happening in Florida.
Yes, it does. Thank you. I do a lot of research every day, and this was from a credible publication. It's from National Geographic.
Right.
But there was a story that I read about how Florida's worried about monkeys, escaped rhesus macaque monkeys with a deadly herpes simplex B that can jump species running amok through Florida. And I looked into this. And I was like, well, where did this? I mean, first of all, standard headline for Florida. This seems about right.
Yeah, Florida reads that. They don't even read the story. They're like, of course.
Yeah, it's Tuesday. We got it. Thank you.
Yeah. Monkeys running
monkeys
loose.
Monkeys are going to ruin everybody.
Of course, yeah.
In 1938, this guy wanted to start a Tarzan-themed island in Florida. And so he purchased six rhesus macaque monkeys from a dealer in New York, and he dropped them off at this island.
Wait.
Yeah, well,
when you go to New York for your
that's yeah. You go to the macaque district over on 34th Street.
Okay,
I
wasn't aware of that
redevelopment zone.
Right,
there's lots of good tax breaks for that.
Right,
out of New York.
Yeah, get your monkeys here. Okay,
he bought these monkeys and he released them on this island, and he didn't know that rhesus macaque monkeys are apparently the Michael Phelps of the monkey family, and they were there 45 minutes before they escaped into the woods into the sweltering swampland of Florida, and they've been breeding there ever since. They're up to several hundred or a few thousand or something like that, and they're increasing at 11% per year. And again, I want to get back to this deadly herpes simplex B virus. People are sleeping. No, it's not. It's not that anybody's doing anything untoward.
Well, I mean, again, it is Florida.
It's possible.
It is possible. One ugly woman, but
but somebody did die from it. I'll say this: if you're in Florida, I think there's way more stuff to be worried about if you're in Florida than these deadly monkeys. I think they're like number eight.
I don't know. But I think you might be better off if you worry about the deadly monkeys.
Your day will be more enjoyable.
Yes. Okay,
the monkeys are number eight. Where is the Broward County Election Board?
I think I put that at like number seven.
Okay.
I think the actual systemic Florida problems far outrank any flash in the pan elections that are going on.
Right, okay, yeah.
But yeah, you can't. So if you catch this herpes simplex B from the rhesus monkeys, it'll give you, it does spinal inflammation, and it'll either kill you or give you brain damage. And it's very difficult to get, but if you get monkey body fluid in your eye or something like that, like one of them throws something at you, or you're performing open heart surgery on a monkey out of a van.
Because I heard you say this last night that, you know, if you get, because one person who died from it, she got monkey body fluid.
Yeah,
in
they
her
didn't
eye.
Say what, but you know.
Yeah, I want.
We don't know. I mean, monkeys. You know, they could have thrown something. They could. There's
right.
any
we
number of
we don't
any
know.
Number of situations, but it did kill her. So it is a concern.
Right.
And they're coming up with all these solutions of like, well, we can like we can castrate every fourth monkey. Like that's a solution, is to try and like we don't want to ruin the population. And
right.
The thing that I started thinking about was Florida has 29 electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
It has deadly escaped swimming rhesus macaque monkeys, and it has 29 electoral votes.
Right.
George F. Will, zero electoral votes.
Right.
George F. Will, he lives in a library. He basically lives in a library with a mattress in the middle. He's a smart, educated guy.
Right. No electoral votes.
Only guilty of like oblique baseball metaphors. No electoral votes go to George F. Will, and Florida gets 29. And that just doesn't seem fair to me.
Right. Right.
I think I didn't get into this podcast, but I think because there is all this difficulty with Broward County and everything else going on in Florida, I think next election, Florida, if you're in Florida, you should be allowed to vote for another state, Canadian province, or astronaut, and that gets to make your vote for you. That's my plan for Florida, is kind of take them, just remove the whole state a little bit from the decision-making process.
Have we thought
process.
About taking the monkeys and putting them in charge of the vote?
I could see a lot of elections going worse than having, you know, these monkeys. Yeah.
I mean, because all of those that are only truly, I mean, if you're being paid off or if you're just like casting a fake ballot, you're not going to do it if you think the supervisor is going to throw some, you know, some feces at you and it might get in your eye and kill you.
Or you could, you know, they make those investing things about like a monkey can, you know, throw darts at a dartboard. Maybe that's how you pick propositions.
Okay.
Is you put the monkeys in charge.
I like that. California is another state that I think may have rhesus macaque monkeys running rampant in it. The San Francisco voter population went out to vote on Proposition C, and it passed with 59.9% of the vote. And this is this. May I quote?
It's over half the vote.
Yeah, Proposition. Wow, you are bright.
Wow.
You are really.
Thank you very much.
Did you just do that on yourself?
Magna cum laude.
Proposition C's victory. Now listen to this. Proposition C's victory means the homeless will have a home and the help they truly need. because the city has come together in love.
So is it just a resolution that we want to help homeless people, or does it have force of law behind it?
No, it's the largest tax increase in San Francisco history.
Oh, okay. But is it a loving tax increase?
If it was just the resolution, I always really like it when Congress debates like if the buffalo should be the national mammal or something. I feel like they're not messing with the economy. So they're doing this.
Companies with more than $50 million in gross revenue receipts will now be taxed on any gross annual receipt revenue in San Francisco. So, and they already have that. So this is just a giant increase. It means that a company that's doing like they say Salesforce here. I don't know how much Salesforce is making in San Francisco, but they say that it will it'll have to pay around $10 million per year, which is.
This is where I dropped the funny thing. Are they giving out vouchers for rental apartments? Are they building homeless shelters? Or where's the money going to go?
No, did you hear what I said?
They're taking the money. I heard that.
They're going to love.
Yeah, Proposition
they're
C.
They're going to love.
This
clearly
victory,
to love.
Now that they've done this, Jeez. This means the homeless will have a home and the help they truly need.
And love. Wait, you didn't even say the love part. Say the love part. That's the best part.
Because the city came together for love for those who need it most.
Am I to understand then that they just came up with a tax plan without a spending plan? I mean, like, I'm actually, that never happens. I'm very impressed if someone actually was just like, hey, you know what? We feel like we might spend money in the future, so we're going to tax you now. Like, usually we do it the other way around.
Well, no, they have a plan. They've doubled the money that they're spending now on the homeless problem to $300 million. But I want to show you how effective it is. The overall rate of homelessness in San Francisco in 2004 was 8,640. Now, I think I've been to San Francisco.
I'm going to go with a higher number now.
They may be using an abacus.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I think there's more than 8,000. But in just that short period of time, just 13 years, they've dropped that down to 7,499. So, you know, they've gotten, you know.
So I just want to make sure I understand. Their position is they've lowered the homeless population in San Francisco in the last 13
That's
years.
That's their position,
okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That I don't believe them at all.
So
just so we're clear.
Well, I mean, I don't know if they're counting the people who are living in tents as homeless now.
I mean that's a
big one. So that's one of the things that they're doing with the money is tents.
What about love? Are they doing love?
Well, they are sending in. I'm not making this up. They are sending in maid service.
Really?
Yes.
What to the
tent cities? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because the homeless can't be expected to clean it up. So I'm gonna
play devil's advocate here for a minute.
Okay, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's say you're a big city on the West Coast, and mm-hmm. you spend a ton of money on dealing with homeless problems. Mm-hmm. It might just attract more homeless people. I mean, like, it might suck them out of other cities, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a devil's advocate.
I think that's the truth.
Oh, okay. Well, so in which case, they're being compassionate in this regard. Like, there's a difference between. Shifting the problem versus creating the problem, I guess, is what I'm saying, right?
Well, but they've clearly already indicated this is about love. So we know it's a good motivation.
And if there's one thing the government's good at doing, it's
giving love.
Right. A large corporate body of bureaucrats that you can't meet or fire can love the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Every year I get my birthday card from the government, and I get my Christmas card from the government. Yeah. I'm just filled with love.
Unlike the 60s, this is not free love. However, this is very expensive love.
Yeah. So now let me ask you this. Speaking of love, you're looking for a love of your life.
Yeah. I'm 34 and ready to. You know, I thought I'd be on my third wife by now. I'm on zero.
Yeah.
I feel like I need to step up my game.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a serious deal. I mean. Don't you think that Andrew is kind of like those guys? Everybody has a friend like this that you're like, he's really nice. He's a really nice guy. And I don't know why I don't know why women are just repelled by him.
Yeah.
But he can't ever seem to find a date.
You know, I hear what you're saying. I think I'm more like Prince Harry. that I'm so unobtainably up there that it scares people.
They're
intimidated to date or make out with
them. Like, you hear that from, like, Victoria's Secret models a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
When I was in high school.
That might be the problem, is I'm not, I should just be dating Victoria's Secret models.
Just a second. I'm trying to imagine you in underpants and wings.
There you go.
Nope, don't think that's...
You're welcome, America.
That's the same problem.
Just like a meerkat that can fly.
Remember, government has led the way here. They pay for love. Have you considered this
option?
I should go to San Francisco, get one of those love subsidies.
Right, okay. Thank you very much, Andrew Heaton. There's Something Off with Andrew Heaton is the name of the podcast. Mm-hmm. We invite you to listen to it and subscribe. Last night was very funny.
Thank you very much.
Very funny. All right. Thank you, Andrew.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.